Blog Talk Radio.
So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview, broadcast and recorded live on Blog Talk Radio from the new media and baseball capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. It's live. What can I tell you? Artist Mark Wheatley and writer Robert Tennell are two good reasons that comic book readers are following the crowds to online media iterations of the 20th century comic pamphlets. Together, they produced last year's Harvey-nominated webcomic, Easy Street. Separately, you'll recognize Wheatley's work from Hammer of the Gods, Black Hood, Frankenstein Monster, and Mars. And Tennell is known for comics such as The Black Forest, A Feast of the Seven Fishes, as well as film scripts that include Frankenstein and Me, Kids of the Round Table, and Believe. The duo's latest joint production is the just-released, sort of, sequel, Lone Justice Crash. And you can read both Easy Street and Lone Justice Crash online for free at www.comicmix.com. They even have a theme song for their webcomics. Here's the music for Lone Justice. Just joined us. That was the theme to the webcomic, Lone Justice. And Mark and Bob, welcome to Mr. Media.
Thanks for having us.
How is everybody? Don't wait.
I'll get that fixed. So, very important question. How many fewer paper cuts have you guys gotten since adopting the webcomics format?
Well, since I never actually have to draw, touch anything involving paper, it's just this has been a painless transition for me. But Mark, I think it's a little different.
Well, not really. I've been working on the computer for quite some time when we did this. All my artwork's been produced on the computer, although I do ink on paper. That's the only paper left in the process. But I draw on the computer, I paint on the computer, everything's lettered and written on the computer. So this way, when I finish the page and look at it and say it's done, it looks the same when you look at it on Comic Mix, because there's no transformation like there used to be when they went to print.
Yeah, it's interesting. I guess two or three years ago, I went down and interviewed Chris Brown, who does the Hagar the Horrible comic strip. And it was the first time I saw the Wacom, or the Wacom, or whatever you want to call it. And
I
Wacom. Wacom, like whack-a-mole.
Yeah.
And I just thought it was fascinating, because he was explaining that he... you know, he draws everything on there, and you know, especially with the web comics, you know, you're trying to visualize in your mind, okay, well, you're drawing it all on paper? No, you're not. Obviously, Mark, you're not doing that.
No, I draw it all on this. It's all little digits. It's ones and zeros. I'm drawing it right directly into Photoshop using my Wacom, and I print it out large on 11 by 17 paper, what would normally have been my pencils. I tape it to the back of a nice piece of Bristol board ingot, scan it back in, and finish the process. And the main reason I do the inking is that I like the way a brush inks as opposed to what I can do in the computer. And I also, based on my experience working in music, always found that when we were working with synthesizers to create an orchestration, including one or two real instruments gave it enough sonic life to keep people's ears interested. So I kind of use the same idea with art.
Very cool.
Little analog with the digital.
Guys, just a technical thing. One of us is too close to the speaker on his phone or headset. So if maybe, okay, thank you. let me ask you guys this. What were the arguments you each considered, if it was even a conscious decision, you know, the arguments pro or con for taking your work online?
Well, I was actually first. Mark was the person that inspired me to go online. Kids in the Round Table was the Kids in the Round Table. Jesus, I got a fever. Can you tell? Feast of the Seven Fishes was the first time I did it, and it was funny. I knew I wanted to go online before I ever considered exactly what the story was going to be, because I, given the current state of comics, I didn't see how to attract the audience that I wanted. You know, hoping that a 75-year-old Italian grandmother who likes to cook fish on Christmas Eve was going to come into a comic shop, you know, by ESP and go, oh, there it is. There's the book I've been waiting for.
Yeah,
so
I think it's pretty obvious that a 75-year-old Italian grandmother would have a computer, though.
Yeah, there was that issue, too. But I sort of had a long ball game. I sort of had a long eye towards this thing, thinking that there would be something beyond it. But Mark had done a promotion for Frankenstein Mobster where the mobster met Vampirella, and I just thought it was really charming and a great way to deliver the story. And I guess you guys were doing...
Well, we had a lot of daily scripts.
Doc Cyborg you had done as well.
For quite some time, yeah. Oh, we ran Dr. Cyborg. We did The Body with Gray Morrow. We actually premiered Hammer of the Gods. Mike Omi and I did that on the site as well. So, I mean, we had gotten a lot of attention and traffic in the old days before there were a lot of comic strips online. These days we haven't been pushing it so much. We pretty much do it over a comic strip.
And are there any cons to doing it? Is there any are there negatives?
Man, I don't know. I think it's great. It's almost like, you know, we used to sit around Insight Studios, the guys, and we would talk about how fortunate stand-up comics were, because you could get in a room and tell your jokes and decide whether they were hitting or missing because you had an audience giving you immediate feedback. We had to wait a year to go to a comic convention to find out face-to-face. And now we're getting feedback, you know, like 10 minutes after things are posted online.
That was the crazy thing, Mark. Do you remember? I remember when you said to me when Feast had come out, and this was on the Insight page on Sunny Fundays. This was before there was a Comic Mix, and I remember that our buddy Al Gross had said, you know, you're never going to get an email, no one's ever going to say anything, but just do this, you know. And about 2 months into it, I was getting these emails from people and stuff, and then Mark calls me one day and he goes, do you know you've had like 50,000 readers?
Uh-huh.
Like, oh my God, you know, when hardcover books coming out and they're ecstatic to do 5,000 copies,
right,
and you've built that kind of a readership in that short a period of time, it's powerful. The other thing I would, that it's not so much about the webcomic thing, it's about the daily thing, which of course Easy and Lone Justice Crash were not per se daily comics. You know, you get them in chunks and we sort of lead you along. But I almost wish that every comic creator at some point had to do down and just had to sit, be forced to sit down and do a true daily 3 or 4 panel strip, because that's incredibly informative. It really
the haiku of storytelling.
Yeah, it really is. And I first started really, I guess, realizing that when Mark had done that short thing with the mobster. It really resonated with me. And, you know, and it's such a, you know, it looks so deceptively simple, and it really isn't.
Hmm.
Particularly if you're trying to do a serialized thing, you know.
It must be very, well, I'm asking you, it's kind of a rhetorical question coming from somebody who's doing an online radio show, but it's very different to get that feedback so immediately. When,
yeah.
You know, it used to be, of course, you know, when you had to rely on DC and Marvel to print your thing, you'd do it, you know, 3 to 4 months ahead, and then it would come out, and it would still take weeks for it to circulate, and then if they didn't directly send you mail, you'd have to wait, and maybe some letters would show up in the comic. I mean, you know,
right.
you're months and months separated from your work, and now you're almost too close.
Yeah. Yeah, there is that.
Well, yeah, I guess so. If Bob didn't have such a clear vision of what we wanted to do, I could see where you could start following your nose too much from people's reactions. But we've got 3 months of this posted into the archives at Comic Mix right now, so you know, we're that far out in front of everybody and what they'll be reading starting on Monday.
But it's true, Bob, that they'll actually, I mean, we've had, I know, I can think of on both Easy Street and another web comic I did where people have actually posted fairly elaborate, you know, wishes of the way they think it's going to end, you know, and those pages haven't even been drawn yet, you know, and you're going, gosh. And one guy, I think, actually, was something I did with Bo Hampton. I think Bo's actually said, you know, if we actually go into print with this, I think I'm going to add a page like this guy suggested. It didn't really affect the story, but it was just a nice, he's like, I want to see one more page of this. So.
Well, it makes a lot of sense then. I mean, they've been audience testing movies for ages, and while I think when you take it to the degree they do these days, it's probably killing the films, I do think when you go back to the age of, say, the Marx Brothers, and they toured the skits to make sure the timing was right, it makes a lot of sense.
Wow. Tell me about the time frame from when you create and have a finished installment of Lone Justice, let's say, to the time that it posts. How much time goes by?
Well, it depends on how much of a lead we've got.
Yeah, I mean, I think, Mark, am I wrong about 8 months?
Oh, I see. Well, we've been at, when did you, see, I think we started writing the script about this time last year, right?
I think it was closer to March or April.
Really? Was that
I think
late?
So.
Well, I mean, we had already been working out the plot for a year before that.
Well, what happened was there was an event, there was a serendipitous sort of a thing, because Mark and I had kicked this idea around for years. And then, and I don't think it was conscious, but then a character sort of jumped up and evolved in Easy Street, a homeless man, who in turn actually, for me at least, was born of another project I was working on that I ended up not doing. But I love this notion of this guy, and it just sort of humanizing a homeless person, because so many times, you know, that's the crazy lady over in the dumpster. You know, well, for all you know, the crazy lady maybe is a college-educated grandmother. You don't know. And because that event happened in Easy Street, it sort of enabled us to take this idea we'd wanted to pursue, and that's what's kind of neat about the two stories feeding each other. As Scott and Danny in Easy Street, as their consciousness was sort of raised or altered in some way because of the sort of profound experience they had with a homeless man when they were kids.
But see, I thought it was important because they were both worried about taking the risk of committing themselves to something that they both totally loved and wanted to do. And so the consequence of that could be failure. And what represents failure better than a homeless person?
Yeah. It's been fun because they've invested a lot. The fictional writer and artist of Lone Justice from Easy Street, you know, have created this. We're pretending we're them, and we're creating this story. And he really does represent what happens for people that say, you know, the hell with it. I'm going to do what I want to do. I'm going to pursue my dreams. And
well,
you know,
they represent the fear, I think, but maybe not the reality.
Well, some people don't make it. Some people
That's
do
true.
Crash and burn.
That's true.
You know?
Let me give out our phone number. If you've got a question or a comment for Mark Wheatley and Robert Tunnell, who I'm calling Bob, the creative team, this is the creative team behind the webcomics, online graphic novels, Easy Street and Lone Justice Crash, give us a call, 646-595-3135. Oh, I like this. No sooner did I give out the number than we've got a call. Hi, do you have a question or comment for Mark and Bob?
Yeah, I sure do. I wondered I wondered what constraints they felt having established the character previously in the Easy Street and doing a whole new story about it in this new story.
Really, we deliberately, I think, kept LJ rather vague in Easy Street because it would have been sort of daunting, you know, to paint ourselves into a corner that far out. And we knew we were doing this story over a year before we started to do it. You know, we knew that they were going to create this book. And so I think we kept him, as he stands right now, it's two-fisted action and you don't really know much about him beyond that. Which I guess goes to say that I was an intimidated writer. I don't know, Mark.
Well, I never actually felt like we had any commitment to the childhood and adolescent fantasies of our characters to be consistent with that when, as adults, they ended up creating a graphic novel going back. The only thing I wanted them to take, and what I usually take, is the enthusiasm and excitement that they had when they were young and completely focused on what they were doing. And not at all concerned about the consequences of the real world impacts on things. So, I mean, the distance between what they did in the context of Easy Street and what they, quote unquote, do in the Lone Justice Crash novel were entirely unconnected. I think they could be, I always thought of it as a 100% freedom between the two.
Let me ask the caller. Can I assume that you've read Easy Street online?
Oh, absolutely.
And for people who may not have sampled online comics yet, how do you feel about reading a comic online versus holding it in your hands and taking it on the bus or what have you?
I tend to like trades and hardcovers better than individual issues. So reading it there for the first time, I have absolutely no problem with it. But I'd sure I'm looking forward to the day when this stuff is in print.
Interesting. And guys, will these comics be in print?
Could be an announcement any day now.
That sounds good. Anything else you'd like to ask the guys?
No, just Ghost Dealers.
Yeah, I wonder where you're from.
Yeah.
Hey, guys.
I'm living for Sunday.
Yeah, I figured you would be, Bob.
All right, well, thanks for the call.
All right, thanks.
All right, bye-bye. This would be the point where, since he brought it up, I would have to say, go Gators. But anyway.
Congratulations.
Yes, thank you. I'm only 27 years separated from the school, so I'll take that. I'll take all credit for Gators winning the championship. I wanted to ask you, it's interesting that, before I ask you that, for people who have not read Easy Street, could one of you give kind of an Evelyn Wood version of the plot?
Yeah, sure. The plot is real simple. We have two brothers. We follow them from childhood up through, I guess, their mid to late 30s. And we go from the point where they're just being completely imaginative as kids, coming up with ideas, and we watch as they get into adult life and either have let go of their dreams or have tried to pursue them and where the success and failures have come. And then I guess the real crux of the plot is when they get back together and try to actually recapture the sense of excitement and commitment and direction they had when they were kids and maybe find some success as adults doing it. In other words, it's kind of like A Star Is Born or Fame or something like that, but with comics and movies.
And then what's interesting is that Lone Justice Crash takes the comic creation that they've that they've dreamed up in Easy Street.
Right. And they actually came up with several titles, and we ran excerpts from them in the context of Easy Street.
Right.
And so really going along, Bob and I originally thought we would end up doing Lone and Justice, but I swear we had long discussions while we were working on the thing, because every time the characters kept coming up with new ideas, we kept going, maybe this one's a better one to do. This is kind of cool.
there's an Arthurian, you know, kind of a Shyamalan-esque Arthurian thing in the middle that I've been playing with for probably 7 or 8 years. And at one point in the middle, you know, and Mark just drew it. It was, you know, like Mark, a lot of times, like Mark, I'll see a scene a certain way, you know, and then I'll see it and I'll be like, Mark did something, nothing like what I thought it was going to be. But that one, he did what I thought it was going to be, and then he took it another step, and I was so thrilled. And then I got depressed. I was like, man, I should have just done this as its own story. You know, but it was too late because we gave away the ending. You know, there was no way to build on it like that. But, you know, and it's always dangerous. I'm going to say something. It's one of those statements that makes me nervous, because I don't want people to ever to think, you know, you're comparing your worker to this or to that. But after shortly, or right around the time we were Easy Street was finishing up online, a friend of mine who was reading it, you know, said, I think you need to see this movie. And I watched the movie and I loved it, and I just watched it again recently, and there's nothing about the storytelling or anything. It's just, there's a movie called Once. It's a very small film, an independent film, and it won actually for an Oscar for Best Song. And all it is about two people that just kind of live to create. And a lot of times films, they'll try to capture the passion of the artist, or the, you know, the sort of driving insanity that'll cause them to risk everything. And most times they fail, but occasionally, you know, you'll have lust for life, or I think The Red Violin captures that sort of, you know, that sort of just living for your art. And Once does it beautifully, really, really beautifully. And that's at least what we were striving for in Easy Street, to try to understand why, you know, grown men and women, you know, well into their 30s, are still pursuing these dreams, you know.
Really trying to make, I guess, obsession look palatable.
Yeah.
Well, the question I have is, okay, so Easy Street fed into Lone Justice Crash in kind of an interesting way, and the second comic picks up a thread of sorts from the first. So what thread are you going to pick up from Lone Justice Crash to create the next one?
We actually have a number of threads, but and of course, obviously, we could just do another Lone Justice, because that's a, you know, fictional standalone character.
Right.
But for Easy Street, I mean, for one thing, they have to do this book, and then we have to decide whether it's going to be a hit for them or a flop.
But I mean, can you do another comic within a comic within a comic?
Well, actually, you could.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I mean, this is kind of goofy, but years and years ago, and I can't believe I'm bringing this up because I always complain about it, but a long, long time ago, I produced this crazy film called Surf Nazis Must Die. And when we were talking about doing the sequel, and everybody was saying, oh, have them do this and do that, and I didn't want to do it at all. I kept saying, no, what we got to do is, it's post-apocalyptic, and they've got a drive-in in this little town out west, and the only print of a movie they've got is Surf Nazis Must Die, and it's affected their whole culture, you know. And I was like, I was interested in that, you know. So I mean, maybe I would want to do a follow-up to this where, like, you know, it's all about how they were trying to make a movie of Lone Justice. That would fascinate me, I think.
That would be good. Guys, we've got another call here for you. Hi, do you have a comment or question for Mark Wheatley and Robert Tunnell?
Yeah, hi, Bob. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Good. And Mark, how are you?
I'm great.
This is,
how are you?
Great. This is Scott and Hernando. Mark and I are old buddies.
Hey,
Mark, I think. Yeah. Hey, man. I think it's a writer's conspiracy. They sound like they got you, you know, out in the tundra there on the phone. But.
Sorry to hear that. I came in from the tundra to use the phone.
Okay. Well, Bob A. and I are down here soaking in the rays in Florida, so I just wanted to make you feel bad.
I've got my plane tickets. We're leaving next Friday.
Oh, good. Good. Bob, I just wanted to take issue with you about the you know, that baseball comment at the beginning of the show. I thought my beloved Phillies sort of kicked your guys' butts this year. What happened there?
Go away. I got to hang
okay,
up.
Okay, okay. Sorry about that. Okay. No, I just wanted to really thank Robert and Mark for, you know, getting the creative juices flowing and really congratulate them on the Lone Justice and ask them about some of their literary and artistic, you know, influences. What brought about this whole confluence of character and I have some other questions too, but I that was one of the main things I was interested in.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, you know, this kind of grows out of pulp there. Pulp magazines.
Absolutely.
Pulp adventure. So,
you know, for Mark, let's just say for Mark,
yeah.
Not so much for Bob.
Yeah, Bob's been on an educational journey here.
Yeah.
We've been teaching him pulp. So, but I like Bob's perspective because he really brings a lot of heart, emotion, and structure to these stories that I've been out. So it's really cool. But anyway, yeah, my influence is from writers. I mean, really, since I did my spider graphic novel a few years ago, I've been wanting to do another one, but not necessarily the spider, just another pulp adventure type thing. So that's kind of the germ of where the Lone Justice idea started spinning out from, but that was long ago, and Bob and I have both tossed it back and forth so many times now that, well, you can see what happens.
Bob, how about you?
Well, I just wrote this or answered this question somewhere where I said, almost everything, and certainly most of the genre stuff that I approach, I was a 16-year-old kid at a convention and saw George Romero's Martin and his deconstructionist approach to the vampire genre. It seared itself into me, and I will forever, I think, be taking things apart to see how they work, you know, from here on out. So I'm very interested in. Well, I guess that's the easiest way I can put it. I like to sort of take these things and break them down to their simplest element, you know, simplest elements and sort of study those things because that's where I think you get at truths and you get at really fascinating, interesting things.
And then I just add in more pages.
Yeah. But as a, you know, as far as writing itself goes, I mean, I certainly have probably a billion inspirations, but the really heavy-duty guys in just straight-up print would be Peter Straub's affected me fairly profoundly, and to a lesser extent Stephen King and Robert McCammon. And I know that's primarily I'm saying that horror-wise, but they along with James Ellroy, there's something about, and even though Ellroy doesn't write like the other three, what they all do is on the surface you think that it's their plots that make their books interesting, but it's really not. It's the characters. They can all plot beautifully. But their characters are just so nuanced and interesting, and it drives me, you know, to find the landscape of a character. I find is just what's really, really fascinating. And then in comics, I mean, you know, all the Marvel black and whites and Tomb of Dracula and stuff that just, you know, Marv Wolfman and Archie Goodwin, those guys just mess me up. I mean, they just mess me up, and you know, and thankfully I've never recovered. I have no desire to, you know. So those are the Mac Daddy influences, I would say.
It's funny you mentioned Straub and King. I remember the first time I met those guys was at a World Fantasy Convention back in the 70s, and I guess the big money hadn't started rolling in for King because he was complaining about paying $8 for a six-pack of beer.
I know that's a true story because he was buying a six-pack of beer, and I was a PA on Romero's Creepshow, and trust me, there was a lot of beer flowing.
That's funny. Two of my favorite characters passed away this year. One was a cultural icon, Betty Page, and the other one was a great artist, Dave Stevens, and they were inextricably linked through, you know, personally knowing each other. And he created a character that was sort of based on pulp characters, the Rocketeer, and that had legs beyond just the comic pages into the films. So, Bob, with your background in movies and Mark's background in you know, pulp influences, and you guys creating original characters, do you ever talk about, you know, the possibility of taking it to the next step, to the next level, to the next artistic form, you know, with films?
Well, you know, it's when I did my very first graphic novel, The Black Forest, with Todd Livingston, Neil Vokes, You know, and it did really, it kind of came out, sold out really quickly, did well. And I remember somebody online was sort of saying, oh, it's just a cynical attempt to make a movie, blah, 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 blah. Well, you know, we had written that thing, had originally written it as a movie. Van Helsing came out. Nobody was going to make it as a movie. We love comics, and we sat down to make a great comic. And, you know, would you like things, you know, particularly Feast of Seven Fishes, no question. I always wanted it to be a movie, just no one could get my vision. But truly, we do not sit down and say, oh, now this is the one this would make. I mean, particularly with Easy Street, I think we've even argued about that because I have a hard time seeing the movie. But it's really not my job in that instance.
I think it's
to see
more
the
of
movie.
A TV theory.
But,
there you go.
But in any instance, I mean, honestly, we just sit down and try to make a good comic. And if somebody sees beyond it, because I got to tell you, sometimes I see this stuff that the studios option from comics, and I'm like, huh? I mean, you know, I can't figure out even what the hook is. And a friend of mine who's an executive at Paramount said it was really great. I ran into him at Comic-Con, and where he was walking the floor, and he came around here, and he goes, you know, 99% of this stuff are great ideas in search of a story. And I thought, wow, you know, I mean, because Hollywood's so disciplined. Whether you like it or not, it's very, very disciplined. And I don't know. Maybe I'm just too sensitive to it, but I'm just trying to write. When I do a comic, I'm just trying to write a good comic.
I just wonder if there's too many idiots on drugs in Hollywood. That's why they make such bad choices all the time.
But, hey, man, I resemble that remark.
The other thing is, you know, growing up on Marvel Comics, when I heard that they, you know, they picked Iron Man, I'm like, why the hell did they pick Iron Man? Then I heard they got Robert Downey, and I said, you know what, it's going to work because Robert Downey will sell that movie because I had a lot of respect for him. But, you know, the thought that, you know, so many characters have, you know, histories before they make it to the screen in comics. It makes me wonder that an original, would it be that much harder for an original character to get sold when somebody says, nobody knows who this is?
You know,
yeah,
I don't know.
Think that plays into it at all.
I don't either.
Yeah, I mean, one time when I was innocent and hadn't had any options, I thought, yeah, I got to wait for a time when my titles are selling hundreds of thousands of copies, like Superman or Batman, before they get optioned. But no, essentially, all they're looking for is a good story to tell, a concept that they can sell, because, frankly, they all think they're better than us anyway.
Right.
Yeah, I, you know, it's funny you said, and it is true about, you know, they have that sort of backstory thing. I mean, one of the things, and I'm guilty of saying it now myself on occasion, you know, people say, oh, you know, TV right now is so much better than feature films, because there is some wonderful TV outside of the reality world being done. But,
hello.
All right, who have I still got?
This
Mark?
Is Mark.
Okay, I think we lost. Let me see. Let's see if Bob, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay, hang
technology.
On. I think we lost Scott. I think Scott had the problem with the phone.
Oh, okay.
So let's do this, Scott. If you want to call back in, I've got two other calls on hold. Go ahead and call back in, and we'll get back to you momentarily. Okay. Hi. Sorry about the noise. Do you have a comment or question for Mark and Bob?
Hello? Yes. Hello.
Hi.
I was just wondering how Bob and Mark plan to incorporate the Frankenstein monster into Lone Justice Crash.
Shut up, Todd Livingston. Todd is referring to my fetish for the Frankenstein mythos, considering he's already co-written like 3 or 4 different Frankenstein things with me, and he is one of America's leading smartasses.
And when you lead with your ass, it always gets you in trouble.
Yeah.
Well, when you have an ass this size.
It's the wind shear, man. It's the wind shear.
Oh.
Well, we do allude to giant robot gorillas, don't we, Mark?
We do.
That's about as close as we get, Todd.
Yeah, we didn't even work in a comment about Frankenstein mobster.
No.
Mark won't let me near Frankenstein Mobster because he knows I have this insidious reboot that I want to do with it, and he's just not going to let me near it.
Right. I was looking at the preview pages that Scoop printed, and it's just gorgeous. Mark, your work, it's beautiful to begin with, but it's just even more so now, especially drawing this pulp. There's just gorgeous noir-y images that I'm fascinated by. I love them.
Wow, your $5 is in the mail.
Yeah, I agree, Todd. He's just moving on. I'm just trying to keep up.
I've actually really had a ball drawing this thing. I got to tell you, it's been really cutting loose. I've just really been having so much fun, although, you know, I spent probably 3 months doing research on all the little things. I mean, when it's so innocent when Bob and I said, yeah, let's set it in 1930 and, you know, and let's do it really authentic. And, of course, the moment you do that, there's – Bob sends me his draft script. Yeah, I put a steam shovel crane in this scene. Oh, okay, no problem. Wait a minute. I got to draw one that looks like it came from 1930. Okay, I need reference. How does that work? Oh, and the guy's got to grab the gears and push them. Oh, wait a minute. What do the gears look like? Oh, no.
It leads to some interesting fights. Like when I had a radio announcer out on location, and we got in a fight about whether or not that was possible at that time. And I'm like, we got a guy that's got an auto gyro throwing gas pellets, you know. But you know what I like the best parts are is that like when I'll come up with this idea, I'll come up with an idea, and I'm like, Mark, here's what happens: they get in a fight, and they're on a train trestle, and they're fighting, and they're leaping from. And he's like, do you know how many timbers there are underneath the train trestle? But then that's when I hide behind, like, well, I'm sorry, Mark. I thought you wanted to do this right. I can change it, you know.
I don't mind the fight on the train trestle. That was easy. But every damn fight scene has had 40 people in it so far.
Yeah.
I mean, our first scene opens in a whorehouse being torn down with, 30 naked women running out of a building while Lone Justice and Scion are having a fight on a steam shovel. And then we end up with another big fight with a bunch of hobos leaping out of a train. And, you know, it's hard to stage that many people all having a fight with police and bows and, oh, man. Anyway.
Are you really complaining about drawing naked women, having to draw too many naked women?
Well, on a schedule, yeah.
Oh, okay. All right.
He'd rather draw one naked woman really well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
See, that's why it's so great as a writer that you don't have to have any talent, as long as you've got a great artist.
Exactly. You know what I like when I sit and think, God, this could take Mark a really long time to draw, and who gives a, you know, who cares?
Exactly. Exactly. And in the instance of webcomics, like you were saying, when you get so much audience response, hell, just have the audience write it. haven't written a freaking word since 2004.
You may laugh, but I actually had a talk with Mike Gold at one point about doing something like that on comics. Like,
wait a minute, Todd, they did. It was called America Junior.
Ouch.
I'm plugging Todd's brilliantly funny comic strip, America Junior. This is marvelous. He did it with Nick Kapitanakis and the Frame Brothers, because I'm a good guy like that. But it is funny as hell.
Well, Todd, I appreciate the call. I've got some other people waiting to get in here with the guys, so I don't know if any other comments or insults you'd like to hurl before we...
Only that I'm really looking forward to reading this.
Okay, that's not an insult, but okay.
But I'm really looking forward to reading this, you bastards. How about that?
There you go. Much better.
See you guys.
Todd, see you, Todd.
Thanks very much for calling.
Bye, Todd.
All right. Bye-bye. All right, I've got another call for you here. Hi, you have a comment or question for Mark and Bob? Let's see if the switchboard will turn on his mic. Wait a minute. There you go. Do you have a Scott,
Bob,
hold on one second. Yep, Scott, hold on one second. Hi, you haven't said anything, but I know you're there. You have a comment or question for Mark and Bob?
This is Russ from Minnesota.
I was wondering how
writing for an online comic differs from writing a print comic. A print comic, you're generally expected to come out with, 24 pages a month, whereas online, you're cranking out anywhere from 3 to 10 pages a week, do you find yourself wanting to tell little storylets that build up into the bigger novel, or are you just taking the bigger novel and chopping it up into those smaller pieces?
We've had 2 points of view on this, each of us, Bob and I. You're right. You're absolutely right. There's 2 ways to go about this, and one way would be to serialize it in chunks that would leave you wanting more each time, just like a chapter or a daily comic or a serial or a weekly episode of something. And the other way to do it is just to think, okay, well, when we're all done, the whole thing is going to be there forever on Comic Mix for free anyway. So we'll just do it the way we think it should be for the final cohesive graphic novel. And we've kind of compromised. At this point, we're going to start out Lone Justice with some very long segments because it's the only way we could think to hook people and give them a great taste of what's going on. But then we'll drop back to our usual, you know, 1 page a week. No, I mean 5 or 8 pages each week, something like that.
You know, I wish that the next time, I mean, when we did Easy Street, we just kind of, I don't know, we just jumped into it, and the story was sort of pulling us along, and I just didn't know how to break down Lone Justice Crash any tighter. But that being said, I mean, I love stuff like, I don't know if you guys ever see like Strontium Dog, like the British comic, you know, that it's like it's in little 8-page burst. My friend Andy got it for me and I just went nuts for it. And I really love that notion of being forced into chapters, you know, and it's something I'd really like to try at some point for the web. I'd just like to try in general.
Well, I think so too, but we've done that with the dailies. And my bottom line feeling is that the long time life of these stories we're putting together are graphic novels, and graphic novels have their own structure. And if you turn them into serials, then it's almost tiring. If you ever try to sit down and watch some of the old serials, like, you know, Buck Rogers or Captain America or Captain Marvel or any of those, and you sit and watch them all through at one time, man, it just is so tiring to see the same structure over and over again. And you can almost feel it in your gut that, oh, no, she's going to hang off the edge of the cliff for another week. Okay.
Yeah, although I would say, like, I would differ a bit. I think, like, in Strontium Dog, they definitely would kind of move. It's just one that I happen to like a lot. It didn't sort of get like that. But I know what you're talking about, because I remember when I first went back and we collected Feast of Seven Fishes in a book, and I finally sat down and read it, you know, beginning to end, and it's almost like a rondelay. You know what I mean? It starts to develop this rhythm. And the rhythm would change up periodically. I'd go from 4 panels back to 3. I started wanting to do more 3-panel work because I could get more stuff in the panel. But it does. You definitely start hitting a rhythm. So, you won't find that in Crash. it just sprawls.
Well, you will, but it's a different kind of rhythm.
No, but I'll say that it's not rhythmic. It's not rhythmic. It doesn't.
Well, it's got a beat. You just can't dance to it.
There you go. Get that Brill Cream or not, whatever.
All right. Well, did that answer your question?
It did, and I have one other comment. I've only seen a few pages from Lone Justice Crash, and those are without dialogue, so I can't.
We ought to check out Scoop today, Diamond Gallery Scoop, because we ran the first few pages from the story that will start on Monday.
Well, what I've seen has blown me away. It looks really exciting. It looks really cool.
Well, thank you, and
don't worry, Russ, the dialogue is excellent.
I'm sure it is.
That's because I've been rewriting it all over. Oh, I'm sorry. No.
He's not lying.
All right. Well, thank you very much for the call.
Thanks, Russ.
My pleasure.
Bye-bye. And now we're going to go back in a second. We're going to go back to Scott, who called back after the phone issue and has been very patient. I just want to make sure I wait for the switchboard to reset. And here we go. All right, let's see. Scott, are you there?
Hey, guys. Yeah, I'm sorry. My phone ran out of juice, but I just wanted to finish up by saying best of luck. And I had come across an interview with you guys on comicmix.com, so I wanted to give a plug to that. Anybody wanted to read any more with you guys, if they didn't fall asleep during this interview, you know. But And now the other thing was I just wanted to check with Mark and find out if he initially didn't want to use a Moody Blues song for the theme to Lone Justice instead, because I know he's a big fan.
Well, definitely an influence, but no, I think going with the original stuff is a lot cheaper.
There you go. Well, listen, guys, great to talk to you, and we'll look forward to all your future efforts.
Great, look forward to seeing you at the next pulp gathering, Scott.
You got it, buddy. Yeah, give my best to Carol. Take care.
I will. Bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks, Scott. Thanks for your patience. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, that frees up the phone lines. I've still got a couple minutes left if you want to get a call or comment in for artist Mark Wheatley and writer Robert Tennell. Guys, I was gonna ask you about the installment format online. The thing I don't entirely get, and I think this is what the caller who was saying that he still looked forward to holding these stories in his hand in a hardcover kind of situation, is that the for the most part, when you or someone else posts webcomics, they're put up in like chapters, kind of like the weekly serial chapters, like pulp. But then even when they're all published, the reader still online still has to click on not only page by page, but you have to click chapter by chapter. And I wondered if maybe that's kind of a drawback yet to this online format, that maybe once all the chapters are done, you should be able to just read through it continuously.
Yeah, I think that one of the great curses of doing this on the Internet is that we have so many options on how to present the material that we're still feeling our way about which ones work best. And I can't really speak for the developers at Comic Mix, because I know we've talked a number of times about all the ideas they have about the different ways they can present things. And it's just an ongoing process. At this point, the material's all there, and everybody's happy about that. But you're right, there should be options to choose different ways to look at it. Bottom line, though, since we're advertising supported, is it'll be presented in such a way to make you look at as many ads as possible, I suspect. At the moment, of course, there's not that much advertising going on, but I think that'll be the ultimate goal, is to find the balance between what presents well and reads well and still allows advertisers access to those eyeballs.
And, Bob, there was a question for you during the calls. And we sort of covered a bit of this, but I want to be fair to the folks in the live web chat. Rocking Jamboree wants to know, does writing for an online comic differ from writing for a print comic, and how has working with online comics changed the process or the end result?
You know, there are two sort of separate issues at play here. Okay, writing for online, writing is writing. Okay, and generally I don't. I won't start a story if I don't know how it ends. And, you know, we knew the ending of Crash before we ever started it. So in that respect, it just becomes about, well, at what pace do we want to tell the story? Now, there's a separate issue when it comes down to, am I writing a daily? And I think really that's, and I'm not sure that's what the person is asking or not, but that's what I think becomes a great differential. Am I writing for daily, or am I writing, you know, like we talked, fixed eight-page chapters, or am I, in the case of Easy Street or Lone Justice Crash, or am I just writing a graphic novel and I'm letting the chips fall where they may, which is a little frustrating at times. And was something that Mark and I both had to get used to, was sometimes we would have to break Easy Street up, and we're like, oh, God, I hate where we're having to break it. But we opted to just play for the bigger, you know, we decided to play the long game and to play for the longer version, and that was that's the way we played it out.
Yeah, I don't know that there really is. I think it's a false assumption that there is a difference between writing a story for almost anything. Basic story qualities are going to be the same for television, radio, TV, or I did that, comics, books, anything. I mean, you have to present characters and tension and structure to pay plots off, and all of that's, you know, in the pot and being stirred. But as long as we're doing graphic novels, I think we should write graphic novels. If we decide to do a daily strip, which Comic Mix may eventually run, then we would structure it to run on a daily basis.
And I think sometimes people too, maybe they perceive that we're under something more of a gun than if we were writing for print, and that's not the case either. I mean, you plan enough lead time as if you were waiting for it to, you know, come back from the printers and everything else. I mean, we don't, Comic Mix doesn't, nor do Mark and I in projects we've done outside of Comic Mix, we don't run projects without significant lead time, without enough pages backed up, because stopping these things in the middle is just the kiss of death.
Rocking Jamboree has a follow-up to that. He or she says, maybe what I was asking in part was, does the instantaneous feedback and response you can get from the readers give you the opportunity to edit, tailor, or write the later chapters differently?
Well, we've corrected typos, that's for sure.
Yeah, I'm real, listen, it's like sometimes I'll be, you know, in Hollywood and we'll be in a meeting, you know, where producers are having, you know, they're, don't want you to be offended, but we're wondering if you would consider this idea for the script. And my response is always the same. It's like, if it's a good idea, I'll take it because I'm going to get credit for it anyway. But at the same time, I think one has to be very, very careful that they don't, when they're doing a fixed thing. Look, when the old soap opera Dark Shadows, man, when Barnabas Collins came out of that coffin, the audience went crazy. And Dan Curtis wisely started shifting the focus of the show. And if I were doing or like Todd called in earlier, like with America Junior, as the comic was hitting and they were getting feedback, they started seeing characters that were more appealing to the reader, and they started shifting more and more stuff towards those characters. I mean,
that's the story of Daily Comics.
That's the story of Daily Comics. But in our case, I think we'd have to be very, very careful, and it's not from a question of ego, but it's you've put a structure in place. You want to be careful. You really want to be careful. To what extent you're going to take that feedback, I think, and the person with the feedback may be right, but man, I would tread very carefully on that. I don't know. Do you disagree, Mark?
Not at all. Especially when we're presenting something that has structure. I mean, a lot of the reward for the reader of reading what we're doing, I hope, is that aside from the joy of going through the process of reading it. When you get to the end, I really hope the sum of what we do is more than the process of just reading it on a weekly basis, because we try to make things pay off, to illuminate, to give insight, to express opinions, to editorialize by the combination of all the elements we present. And it's not a random thing. I mean, comics for a long time. I mean, I look at guys, I love Alan Moore's work. I really do. But I think that he has been far more successful writing serialized comics than he has ever been at writing a complete graphic novel. He's better as a structuralist on an episodic basis than he is on a total overarching arc. And I think that's true of just about every comics writer that came along before maybe 5-8 years ago, something like that, when people finally started coming in writing for the long form.
Well, guys, we've got another call who's been patiently hanging in there. Let's get them on here. Hi, do you have a comment or question for Mark and Bob?
Am I on?
Yes, you are.
Oh, great. I just had a quick question for you guys. I have my own comic book, I guess, that is in the works right now, and I kind of wanted to get your opinion. Since I respect your work so much, what would be the best way at getting it out there in the public? Some people have told me buy a booth at Comic-Con and get it out there and, you know, shop it around that way. But then I've also heard get it all online and have my comic strip start out as an online periodical and have it expand from that way. So I wanted to get your opinion on what you think is the better way to get it out there to the public.
Yeah, that's a good question, and it comes up a lot. The short answer is first of all, you have to answer your own questions first. You have to know exactly what you want to do. You've created your own comic. Do you want to also be a publisher? Do you also want to be a distributor? Do you also want to be a marketer? To some extent, you're always going to be a marketer of your own material. But if you're not up for essentially what are like four full-time jobs, then you may want to consider selling your material, or rather licensing your material to a publisher. In that case, you just go to those publishers and present the material. It never hurts, though, under the way the market works these days, to post things to a website as long as you clearly state that you own it and that it's protected. You can make sure it's always there as a gallery for anyone you contact directly and say, this is a book I'd like to do, take a look. And meanwhile, you'll be getting feedback from people who are actually reading it. And I find that when I was first starting, feedback from readers was the absolute most valuable, because it gave me a sounding of what people understood. When I would write a story I would think would be 100% clear to me and my family, but when people who hadn't been around during the creative process read it, they would go, who the hell is the guy that shows up on page 5? And we'd all realize that we hadn't laid enough groundwork for that. So,
I think Mark's touching on something else there, though, that is sort of, it's an unavoidable consequence in this post-digital age, is that you almost have to now plan on building your readership one reader at a time, at least to get that core group of people that care, because they can do more promotion than you can ever do if you can hook an audience. And that requires work. You know, I mean, I remember Mike, I think it was Mike Richardson, told me a story one time about Neil Gaiman and how early in his career, man, he would work it. You know, he would, because people are inundated with so much just noise, you know, in comics alone, and then you factor in all the other noise that they're facing, how do you get their attention? And
so
put it up on the web and do some search engine optimization so that people can find it. And, you know, and absolutely, but it's not enough to just go to the shows. You know, you got to do those giveaway ash cans. You've got to get some true believers. You know, you've got to get some folks out there that believe in what you're doing. Because it's amazing. You know, sometimes you'll go down through Artist Alley, you know, and you'll see these guys that have never been published professionally or anything, and they're kind of quietly sitting sketching, and you pick up their ash cans, and they're just wonderful work. But they themselves, they're like, you know, I paid my $300 for the booth, and it's still not working for me. I mean, you got to forge those personal relationships.
Even if my ash can is just something that I have fashioned together via Kinko's or something like that, is that okay, or should it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Unless you're independently wealthy, I'd say that's great.
Yeah.
by the way, the folks at Kinko's would like you to know that's now FedEx office.
Okay.
By the way, we really like 48-hour books online. They do a great job.
48-hour. Okay, I'm going to check them out. Thank you. Thank you.
Well, thanks
for putting me on. I do appreciate it.
My pleasure. We appreciate your patience, and I hate to give you the hobo's rush.
No,
but, we're very close to running out of time. Thanks very much for calling.
No, it was an honor talking to you guys. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right. Bye bye. Well, I had intended to take at least a segment of the show to talk about the other things that you guys are each working on, so I'm going to take a real quick second and run through them. I want to tell listeners that if the live feed runs out while you're listening, the show continues, and you can catch whatever you missed, either at the beginning or the end, by listening to the archive, which we'll post within about 10 minutes of the end of the show. So we haven't entirely gone away. We may still be talking for a minute or two. So what I know is that Robert Tennell, is working on a new werewolf graphic novel with Bo Hampton, who I interviewed a year ago for my Will Eisner site, and also a Hammer type, what did you describe it as? A Hammer type Monster Mash miniseries with Neil Vokes. And also, you've produced a feature length documentary on UFO journalist Gray Barker called Shades of Gray. And I hope I got that right. And Mark?
Yeah, Mark Wheatley's actually
Oh, great. Oh, excellent. Well, you guys just can't be apart.
It's incestuous.
Mark is pretty far along working on the next Frankenstein Mobster graphic novel, and he's working with MJ Butler on the scripting for this one. So, guys, I want to thank you very much your time. And I also, before I forget, I want to tell everybody that the price of entry for Mark Wheatley and Robert Tunnell's latest work is free. You can read Easy Street and Lone Justice Crash at no charge on www.comicmix.com. And if you check the Mr. Media archives, you'll find an interview with Mike Gold, right? Mike Gold from comicmix.com. About a month back. Mark and Robert, Bob especially, I know you haven't been feeling well. Appreciate you guys so much taking all this time. I know listeners appreciate it. It's been very busy, both on the phones and in the web chat. And thank you both very much, and Happy New Year.
Thanks to you, Bob. Really appreciate it.
You put on a good show.
You do.
Thanks, guys.
All right.
Take care, and good luck with the next one.
Thanks.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Folks, for more great comics-related interviews, you can surf over to our main website, www.mrmedia.com. That's where you can listen to my earlier conversations with Dave Gibbons of Watchmen, Gene Colan, Joe Sinnott, Wendy Pini, Chuck Dixon, and many, many others. Please think about writing an online review of Mr. Media, casting a vote for Mr. Media, or marking Mr. Media as one of your favorites. Whether you listen on Blog Talk Radio, Pointer Online, Digital Journal, Podcast Pickle, Vox, Folio, Mediafly, Podfeed.net, Blueberry, Zencast, Odeo, or iTunes. You can also listen to the show with a piece of string and a tin can in many locations. If you've got an idea for a guest, email me directly at bob@andelman.com. You can also follow me on Facebook or on Twitter, www.twitter.com/Andelman. Thank you so much for joining us today. I always appreciate when you give up a little piece of your day to spend it with Mr. Media. Come back real soon, everybody. Bye-bye.